And coming up next, back of the book, 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock right here in New York City. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers, and back of the book right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. Let's hope we're still here after today. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty post-storm hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
Yeah, we had a big storm earlier today. Well, yes, we'll talk about that in a bit. And we're going to talk about various things, and you can find out a little bit more about what we're talking about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And you can go up there, look around at things. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the very top, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. And click on that, and you get to the webpage for tonight's program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 50th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded, and this program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning, which is why we referred to the storm, because the storm was here just a little bit ago, whereas when you're listening to it on Saturday morning, it was around yesterday, but it's a much fresher event for us. Anyway, if things have happened between Friday afternoon and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them, and that's because a recorded program can't be as up-to-date as a live program. However, this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. Yeah, 50 times. This is our 50th pandemic episode. Wow. And going to the top story of the news of the world for this fortnight, since we haven't been on for 2 weeks. On Twitter, we are sort of holding at 110 followers. We've been going back and forth between 111 followers and 110 followers for the past fortnight. Ah, well, people decide they like us or they don't like us. I guess that's what's going on. So I was reading some stuff in the June 2021 Scientific American, and I came across this article, and it's titled Real Living Fossils. And the article is by Jennifer Fraser, a Science Journalism Award winner. And it talks about marine biologists going out and exploring the South Pacific Gyre, which is this place in the South Pacific Ocean where you get the water swirling around the area, the gyre, and it's considered one of the most arid places on Earth. They say it's a marine desert. And they say that in the center of the gyre is the oceanic pole of inaccessibility, which is just a place where it's hard to go. And the gyre is also where the microplastic particles accumulate. These are the chunks of plastic that we all use and we throw it away. And one way or another, an awful lot of it ends up in the Pacific Ocean. And it moves around and it ends up accumulating at the Pacific Gyre and the oceanic pole of inaccessibility. Oh, my godlessness. You got the North Pole, the South Pole, and the oceanic pole of inaccessibility. Eesh. Anyway, this place has still water and not a lot of nutrients enter into it. And so it's hard to have things live there. Not a lot lives there. And it says in the article, it takes at least a million years for 1 meter of stuff, that's all the stuff that filters down from the surface, to build up. So a meter of silt takes a million years to accumulate in this oceanic pole of inaccessibility place. And it's really not a nice place to live for anything. But some stuff does apparently live there. And so these scientists are going out there. They want to see what's there and how it is. And they took cores of the sediment and they drilled down. And of course, what they do then is they drill down and they bring up what are called cores. And it's basically a drill tube that they bring up and it still contains all of the sediment that it went to. And they drill all the way down there and the tubes contained up to 100 million years of Earth history. Oh, man, this is quite something. When you think about that, you can get a drill core that has 100 million years of Earth history, and they can go through that. And what they do is, with that kind of thing, they bring it to a special place, and usually they keep it very cold, because otherwise stuff will start rotting. And what they do is they push it out of the tube, and they have these special facilities for it. And what they'll do then is cut it in half. And that way they can access it wherever they want and also get a general view of how things progress over 100 million years. So they did a study about these bacteria and all the things they found there. What they did was they wanted to see how this stuff worked. So they took samples from the core. They figure they've got some bacteria in there, and they put them in, petri dishes, and they fed them. They put little bits of food that bacteria would like, stuff they would like in there. And it says in the article, up to 99% of the microbes that were fed quickly woke up and ate. And within 68 days of incubation, the bacteria had increased their numbers up to 10,000-fold, doubling about every 5 days. Some of these things are amazingly ancient. I mean, we talk about things that are old, that are living, and, you know, you have, I remember there was a great deal of, oh my gosh, when some wheat was taken out of an ancient Egyptian burial place. I don't know if it was a pyramid, because those got ripped off like crazy, but some little mastaba somewhere, and somebody got a hold of that, and they planted it, and it grew, and they said, this is thousands of years old. How amazing this is. And you've got things like bristlecone pines growing in the American West, and they're many thousands of years old. There's a giant fungus growing somewhere in the Midwest, and it's supposed to be like 36,000 years old. Well, one of the issues is they cannot date a microbe. I know some people who've tried to date microbes, and it just didn't work. You know, the conversation just died flat. Anyway, so yes, you can't date the microbe. It's a single cell creature, and they just don't have the technology at this time to be able to tell exactly how old it is. However, they point out that the microbes in this sediment under the Pacific Oceanic Pole of Inaccessibility, these things are a certain size, and the sediment is tamped down, of course, over time, and the sediment doesn't allow them to wiggle out. They can't go back, you know, up and down or back and forth. They're kind of stuck in a very small area, and they can't get out of it. And so they figure they can, of course, date the layer of sediment that these things are in. And some of them are in sediment that is 100 million years old. And they feed them, and they start eating and reproducing. They're saying that some of the cells, some of the microbes that they were feeding, that they found down there, may have settled to the bottom of the ocean when plesiosaurs swam overhead, and these things are waking up, essentially, and multiplying. So this is a pretty interesting idea that living things can do that. And of course, they're microbes, and microbes are the really seriously robust creatures on Earth. Human beings are maybe 200,000 years old, maybe a bit older. Microbes started showing up, about 4 billion years ago. And we're going to be gone when they're still here. And eventually they'll get it too, because everything ends up going. And eventually even the creatures that live inside the rocks with all the heat, those things are going to get killed too eventually. But they sure do outlast us, don't they? And one of the things that was interesting to the scientists was, of course, there are various bacteria and fungi and other things that produce spores, which will become bacteria or fungi. And the article says, quote, spores have often been suggested as a vehicle for superannuated bacteria. Yet when the scientists identified the gyre sediment cells by probing their DNA, they saw that spore-forming types were relatively absent, unquote. So it turns out that most of the revived bacteria that they got a hold of and basically came back to life were breathing oxygen, which means they did without it, because they couldn't do a hell of a lot of metabolizing down there. I mean, there is another set of microbes found in a South African diamond mine. It was diamond to gold mine. It was a very, very deep mine in South Africa. And what they found was these creatures have a very slow metabolism, the South African ones, and they may live for 10,000 years. These things weren't living, really. They were kind of dormant somehow. And this dormancy isn't really understood at this point in time. Of course, since they were there and there weren't a lot of other critters around, nothing was eating them. And they weren't reproducing, so they weren't aging in that way. So, gee whiz, oxygen-breathing bacteria, aerobic bacteria is what they're called, they have managed to sit it out for millions of years. They also found what they call a light-harvesting bacteria in one sample. They find this is odd because when they brought them into the laboratory, they were careful not to let any light get on them because a lot of these bacteria live in places where there's no light. And when you hit bacteria that live exclusively in darkness with light, you get a big reaction. You kill them. I know this from the time when I finally opened the refrigerator after about 3.5 years, and there was this amazing reaction that happened in the water. Well, the water world that had come to exist in what had been the CRISPR. But that's another story. Anyway, one of these bacteria, and this is a bacterium that I am probably not going to pronounce correctly, called Trucoccidiopsis. It's a cyanobacterium, and it has a reputation for being able to survive. It is extremely robust. It can live under translucent rocks, which the rocks protect it, and some light gets through. And they can live in dry, cold, salty, and radiation-drenched places. It also has the ability to use red light, which is a low-energy form of light. And basically, they're wondering how the hell a photosynthetic microbe was able to eat and reproduce and grow in their dark laboratory. So this is a question there. So some of these things are from like 100 million years ago, and that, I'm going to try it again, Croococcidiopsis cyanobacterium. It is so robust that it's being considered as something that would help to terraform the planet Mars. Oh, man, that's not going to happen in the near future, but they figure this thing is so tough, they could plant it on Mars, probably put it under the soil a bit, and it will start going. And one wonders if that could happen. Anyway, this is another illustration of the fact that you've got these amazingly capable microbes all over the earth. And this is just a tiny place. This is an extreme place where you've got this deep amount of sediment. And because it doesn't build up much, when you drill into it, you can very economically get down to 100 million years. And, you know, until you hit like bedrock. Whereas other parts of the ocean, you'll get thousands, maybe a couple of million years because there's too much activity. So this is an interesting thing. And also, this does relate to, is there life in the universe? If you have earthly microbes that can be dormant, and these are, again, not spore-forming microbes. These are microbes that breathe oxygen and need a steady supply of it. These things are able to live in sediment that's 100 million years old, and some of them can really withstand radiation. In fact, there's a type of, I forget the name of it, I probably couldn't pronounce it either. There's a type of microbe that they have found tends to congregate and live in the water, the heavy water around nuclear reactors. And this stuff's in there and it's thriving. It's not being killed by the radiation. It's kind of radiation proof. And so this is pretty amazing stuff. And then, of course, you've got the tardigrade thing. It looks like a little, it's sort of bear looking, people say. It's a very strange looking thing. And it tardigrade, right? Yeah. It tardigrade. It can survive space. It can survive being in outer space without oxygen. It can really just live. And so, yeah, it sort of says there's a really, really, really good chance that out in the universe there are microbes, and there are probably a hell of a lot of them. And, oh boy, it's going to be so interesting if we can start getting the first biological samples from first Mars and then maybe some of the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. I don't know that we're ever going to get anything from another star system. Certainly in your and my lifetime, we are not going to see any probes sending back information or sending back samples from another star system. That's just too far away. But will at some point humans be able to get samples from out there? The most efficient thing would be to put together something that could probe for them and find out what's happening and then send an electronic signal back. I mean, you can't do that forever because the signal degrades. So, but it would certainly give us a longer range than we have now. I suspect that it would discover microbes on other planets. And, of course, they're looking for microbes on other planets by looking at the atmospheres, because if the atmosphere has oxygen in it, it is very probable that you've got something like cyanobacteria making that oxygen, because oxygen really reacts with everything near it, which is shown by the surface of Mars, which is red because the oxygen reacted with everything in the surface. So I found this very fascinating, that in a laboratory, microbes that may be 100 million years old, and again, they're trapped there. They are too small. It's like there are bars holding it down at a certain level, and they can't migrate upward. And wowee, I find that interesting. I hope you do too. Anyway, that's in the July Scientific American.
And you know what you could call the movie about these microbes?
What?
100 million years in dirt. That's a science fiction joke, folks.
And of course, it's summertime. Ah, I like summertime. Pickles, not so much. This past week, we went out purely for fun for the first time since March 4th, 2020. And we went to Coney Island, which is where we went on March 4th, 2020. Yeah, we don't go a lot of exotic places. Coney Island is pretty good for us. Anyway, we went there. And again, as I said, I haven't been out. We haven't been out together for fun for anything. It's been vaccinations and a dentist visit, stuff like that. And, you know, Pickles did get to visit some people at the beginning and recently. I didn't go because I'm still bunkered. And so this is the first time we just went out for fun. And so we went down to Coney Island, and Coney Island is still there. And we found that Seaside Park, which is a little park that they put in there to go right next to what's called the Ford Amphitheater. And again, it was the old, what was it, Child's Restaurant?
Yes.
And which became a merry-go-round at one point, and which then became just derelict. And then people said, well, we'll make it this Ford Amphitheater thing. So they've got that for 10 years. But part of the deal was they had to make a public park. There had been, prior to that, people growing vegetables, this big vegetable garden by the local inhabitants, and they just bulldozed over.
That was an amazing garden. They
yeah.
had all kinds of, and they had kept chickens in there too. They had a little chicken coop, but very, I mean, just a lot of veg. And some flowers.
And they were, and the people would come there and eat it, of course.
Yes.
So they were raising their food there. It was yes. crops. And anyway, so they got wiped out some years ago now. But we went to Seaside Park, and we were disappointed to see that it's largely blocked off now with some kind of netting that you can't see through. And we figure that the Ford Amphitheater people are trying to make sure that no one can see their events without paying. And really, there's a huge mound of earth between the park and any event. So how are you going to see that? And they already have a fence, a chain link fence that keeps you from going in there.
Well, some people were known to climb that fence at one point.
So you have security there saying, no, don't do that. I mean, if they're going to climb the fence, if they're bold enough to do that, they're probably bold enough to climb the fence and this netting. I mean, they can probably get through that, cut the netting and climb the fence. But, you know, it really detracts from the park. It's supposed to be a public park, and now, I assume for the time, you know, the time usually May to September or May to October when they run events at the Ford Amphitheater, that they are going to keep this netting up. And that's kind of awful. And some of the picnic benches are cordoned off by this. It's really not nice.
Well, do you remember when they first opened the former Child's Place and had all these concerts? They just locked the park. It was supposed to be. It's a privately run park for the public.
Yeah,
and they just didn't open it.
That was true for a while. For a while, they didn't do that, and so yeah, it's disappointing to see that. But this is what happens when you make deals with people. They want to make their money out of this, and if the park part of it is messed up a bit, they don't care. Oh well. So anyway, we went to Coney Island. We looked around. We saw the part where they're going to put their water park, which is on the site of the old original Thunderbolt. The bastardized Thunderbolt is next to it. I guess you could call it Thunderbolt 2 or something. Completely different ride. But the classic Thunderbolt from the 20th century, pretty early in the 20th century, they bulldozed that years ago. And in that space, they are now setting up a water park, and you can see all sorts of concrete forms, and there are also some other form. Well, you can see concrete pads, and then sticking out of those, there are forms where they're obviously going to pour concrete and put stuff in it and build all of this. And on East, is it East 16th Street or East 17th Street, they have what I guess is everything that's going to be done to make up this water park. There are flashy looking entranceways, and there are big tubes, and there's all sorts of big metal work that's obviously going to have water flowing through it. So they've got all of this stuff there, and talk about, again, private enterprise taking over public space. So they have that going on. And also Stillwell Avenue, the very south side of Stillwell Avenue, is now completely taken over by Zemperla, which runs Luna Park. Talk about expropriating the name of something classic. And so they have some of their business out there. You buy tickets and stuff there, and they take it over. So, Jesus, so much of this, yeah, we're gonna do things down there. We're just gonna take over public space and make it private and make our money off it, and that's just not so good.
And it's because of the pandemic they're able to do this.
That certainly helped them a lot, but I think also certain people in city government are really letting this go on.
And I'd like to point out that Dino's Wonder Wheel Park has not done anything like that.
Yes. So we went down there, and we were hanging around down in Coney Island, and it was so good. And, you know, we're out of practice. We're out of practice for going out in the summertime. And again, we haven't done that since 2019. Since the summer of 2019, we haven't gone down to Coney Island in the summertime. We were there in the very early, no, actually it wasn't spring, March 4th.
It's still winter.
Still winter time. So the last time we had been there was still the winter of 2019-2020. The last time we were there in summertime was the summer of 2019. We're out of practice. So we went there and we brought some sunblock, of course, because it's like blazing. This is, you know, July 7th or something. And we're down there and the sun is blazing. And we get in there and Pickles puts the sunblock on me. I need sunblock. And I said, I don't need it on my hands. And, well, when we got home, I said, oh, I guess I needed it on my hands. the back of my left hand looks like, I don't know, looks like some salmon had been subjected to radiation or something. It's got all sorts of stuff sticking out of it, and it's a bright red. Oh, anyway, so there was that. We are out of practice for that, but we'll certainly remember to apply the sunblock to our hands the next time. Pickle's got a little bit of sunburn, but not nearly as much as I did, because I said, I don't need no stinking sunblock on my hands.
Good. That means officially you are not going to fight me anymore on this.
Anyway, so we went down there, and we looked around at things. We sat around in a certain bench we sit in. We had a picnic because we brought food from home, because we were going to get Nathan's hot dogs, which I haven't had in a long time, obviously. But Nathan's didn't put out a coupon for July yet, so I'm not going to pay a giant amount of money for a hot dog. In fact, I'm kind of borderline with even the current coupon that they give out, because it costs rather a bit. In any event, we went around there. We did stuff. Got sunburned. We looked at there's a new ride down there. It's kind of a roller coaster, and we saw some people going by in it, but we didn't really get to see it much because they ran it once, and in the space of a good 15 minutes, they didn't run it again. So I think it's not too populated for that thing yet.
Well, I believe it has been, and of course on the weekends. Since they've been open on the weekends, it's been very popular.
Okay. So since we didn't go on a weekend, I guess there weren't enough people to really get it going. So we didn't get to see it much in action, and there's that. Another change we were shocked by, Nathan's countdown clock is gone. There's this big, had been, this big countdown clock on the side of Nathan's building down on Stillwell off Surf Avenue. And down there, they had the countdown to the next hot dog eating contest. So it was an amusing thing to see. It counts down to July 4th every year. And we got there and it's gone. And Pickles says they were having trouble with it. But it's interesting. The thing is just flat out gone. The side of the building is painted in black and white sort of the skyline, I guess. And that's all there is. So, gee whiz, I wonder if the countdown clock will ever come back or if that's the end of it.
We have to do some research to find out.
I guess we will have to do that. But anyway, we got to go to Coney Island for the first time in a very, very long time. And it was enjoyable, mostly, except for the sunburn. And, and, of course, loads of people smoking stinking pot on the boardwalk. Oh, God, that's the freaks these days. It didn't used to stink like that, but now it does. Oh, I should mention that the next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on Wednesday, July 14th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And, of course, the reason why we have not been going out for fun for such a very long time is because there's a pandemic going on. Not everybody wants to admit that, but there it is. So here are the Johns Hopkins website statistics. They say that COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 185,858,801 on Friday, and global deaths reached 4,014,591. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 33,808,117, and the death toll in America was 606,773. So, 3,299 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 2 weeks ago. The death rate continues to get lower in America. That's because so many people are vaccinated now. We're averaging about 1,650 dead in America per week over the past fortnight. It's still a big number, but it's a lot better than it had been. I mean, it had been more than 10 times that for a while. It's being reported that almost all COVID-19 deaths are now among those who have not been vaccinated. In Maryland this past week, they said that in June, they'd had more than 100 reported coronavirus deaths, and all of those who died had not been vaccinated. That is quite a telling statistic right there. It seems like, anti-vaxxers really do seem to be self-selecting themselves for winnowing out. You really have to believe in cloud cuckoo land stuff to deny the fact that people are dying because they're not vaccinated, and people who are vaccinated, very, very few of them are getting infected. And in fact, breakthrough infections, as they're called, it's a breakthrough infection if you're fully vaccinated and you get infected anyway. They account for about 0.1% of the hospitalizations. And mostly those people are not dying. And by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. And again, this was all mostly preventable. Again, between the Chinese Communist Party and Donald J. Trump, this could have been prevented. And in other news related to this, of course, the Delta variant is now the majority variant in America and going around the world. It's the majority variant in most places. And Pfizer is looking to get approval for a Delta-specific booster shot, which they say the current Pfizer already protects, but they could do it even better with a booster shot for the Delta variant. And that's interesting because with the new technology, the mRNA technology, that's messenger RNA, they can put out the pieces that will get your immune system all stimulated, but they don't have to do a whole lot of other things that they used to have to do with big chunks of vaccine or vaccine that's been damaged that they would put into, or even live vaccine, which can be really dicey. But anyway, they're going for a Delta-specific booster, and I'll point out that unvaccinated people in India are where we got the Delta-specific, the Delta variant. And there's a Lambda variant, I hear, someplace, and this is what's going to happen. You're going to get these variants coming out because the more people who get it, the more variants there are. And on one TV show, they were showing the places that are not getting vaccinated and the places where the COVID-19 cases and deaths are on the rise instead of declining. And they had five places, and they were in the South. And where the COVID-19 is rising is the same place where they're not getting vaccinated. Really, you really have to be goddamn dense not to get it. But that's what's happening, and people get to do that. And I should pitch a little bit here. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York. And we're non-commercial because we don't contract with a company to sell their stuff. So you can't buy a Chevy here. And you can't buy all sorts of things here. We are listener-sponsored, and that's not a slogan. That is a statement of fact. We are supported by you. You are the sponsors of this radio station and of this radio program. And what we have to do, of course, is ask you to be the sponsor. We can't force you to be the sponsor. We don't have that. As I said, we don't have a contract where some company has to give us money while we let them tell you how great their widgets are. So we have to ask you to please support us. Please help keep us going. And how we do that is we ask you to get up, go to your phone, dial 1-212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. And when the call center people pick up, tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. It's important you let them know it's back in a book. That way we get credit for it. Anyway, what you do is you can become a BAI buddy, and a BAI buddy is the name we have for our sustaining membership program. And what happens there is you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy, and then you tell them how much you would like to donate on a monthly basis to WBAI. And you can donate $5 a month or $10 a month or $15 a month or $20 a month. You could do more, but I think most of the listeners to this program, $5 to $20 is pretty much it per month. You can do more if you want. And so you tell them that, and they will start setting you up. And you tell them when you want to be billed. And what happens is they will charge your credit card or debit card for the $5, $10, $15, or $20 on the day of the month that you specify. That way it's convenient for you, because there are some days of the month that you don't want your credit card or your debit card dinged, and so you don't choose those days. Pick a convenient day of the month. Again, it's very easy. Call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And by doing that, you keep Back of the Book on WBAI and you keep WBAI on the air. It's important that we do this. We're trying to raise more money. We're trying to raise enough money so that we will become self-sustaining. We aren't self-sustaining yet, but we're trying to get there. And if we get enough BAI buddies, we can do it. And so, yeah, we're asking you to become a BAI buddy to keep things going here. 1-212-209-2950 is the number to call and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And that will be very helpful, and it will keep WBAI alive. There are all sorts of people who would like to see us not be alive, but you can be one of the people who actually keeps us alive by calling 1-212-209-2950 and say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And we thank you for that if you will do it. I want to mention something. On a previous program, we had talked about UFOs and what the hell this stuff is. Another thought occurred to me in this past 2 weeks when I've had some time in my hands, a rare thing. And we talked about them on a previous program. And I'm wondering now, could the entire thing with these something or others that the fastest aircraft can't catch, that are amazingly maneuverable and all of this stuff, could the whole thing be nothing but disinformation aimed at other nation states? Because you would figure, generally we're saying it's got to be either China or Russia doing this. And, of course, we could be the United States doing stuff that they're not telling anybody about. That is a possibility. But if you're in China or Russia, you're saying, wait a minute, the United States is having this problem now. One, maybe they're lying and they have something that's so capable. Oh, boy, we should start getting scared, because if they have something that can evade their own best aircraft, then they can evade our best aircraft. Two, China says, oh, maybe Russia has this thing. Oh, boy, we better be careful, because Russia has stuff that's better than what we have and what the Americans have. Russia says the other way. Oh boy, look at that. The Americans can't keep up with it. Maybe it's Chinese, and China has these aircraft that are very superior to what both the Americans and we Russians have. And so you can get them thinking all sorts of things. This could be a gigantic head game. That's just a thought. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's a thought. Okay, well, the bylaws referendum is over with Pacifica. It ended this past Wednesday night, and I hope you all voted no in the bylaws referendum. And they slapped a gag order on everything after one of our programs, so we couldn't say anything about it. We said a little bit about it early on, but then we couldn't say much about it because... that weekend, we could have taken advantage of that weekend, but they slapped the gag order on after our program, and we haven't been able to talk about it. And I had to put these stupid disclaimers up on my website because I mentioned glib.com. And so, a whole lot of crap with all of this. Anyway, so we couldn't talk about it. The people who want to hijack Pacifica were spreading lies about that. They put up these bylaws they want everybody to approve and replace the current bylaws with, which puts them in charge, literally. It has their names on it, and it puts four people in charge of all of Pacifica. All of those people are from west of the Mississippi, by the way. Anyway, they lied a lot. They also did things like say that Jane Fonda had endorsed their hijacking attempt. And it turns out that she didn't. And she called up the Pacifica lawyer and said, "What is this? People are saying I'm endorsing this." And he had to explain it to her. And she says, "I'm not endorsing that." So, oh boy. They also lied by saying that Pacifica is selling the building that sister station KPFT operates out of to make money because we're so desperate. But the reality is that the old KPFT building was in bad shape from neglect and from things that happened during the pandemic. They couldn't go into their station because of the pandemic. And while they were out, people broke in and stole the plumbing. And so they had this this big leak. I mean, you know, the plumbing was gone and nobody turned off the water. And so... there's water building up in it, and it really ruined the building. And they have to sell it. They can't occupy that thing anymore. And so, there's that. And then they're talking about, the audits. Their audits are so terrible. Well, in fact, Pacifica is now completely caught up with its audits. Pacifica got its FY20 audit into the California Attorney General's office on June 30th, which was the deadline, so we got it in. The audits had been neglected for like 7 or 8 years, and for the past 2 years, 2 or 3 years, Pacifica has really been going at it, trying to get the audits done, and we had to do them for 2013 and 14, years and years of audits had to be caught up on. And some of the people who are trying to hijack Pacifica with this bylaws referendum, they were a part of preventing the audits from being done. They're very destructive people. They want to destroy Pacifica. Now, the results of the referendum, since it's over, the results of the referendum, whether Pacifica gets hijacked by the bad guys or whether things go forward, will be announced on July 10th. That's later today as we're broadcasting on July 10th. And we hope that the bylaws hijacking has failed, because if it didn't, then this may be our last program. We really hope it failed. And we want to do some merry birthday wishings. Yes, merry birthday to Uncle Sidney Smith. You hear him every week starting off the radio program. And also to a Rat Girl of the West.
Dear Rat Girl's birthday was this past Thursday, and our beloved Uncle Sidney's was Friday.
Friday, okay. Merry birthday to Uncle Sidney and Rat Girl of the West. And here's a little tradition that we always do right about now. We want to mention that this Champlain Tower South tragedy in Surfside, Florida, we started hearing about it when we were about to do our program 2 weeks ago, but it was too late to do anything about it. Stuff was just coming in, and that was it. And so we were off last week, and so we didn't talk about it. And now this is the first chance, and oh, man, that is a tragic thing. And I don't know, there's a lot of magical thinking going on with this. The immediate thing that struck me about it was, oh, prayers and praying. You know, the thing falls down, and the governor and other people, oh, and we have our prayers. We're all praying for the people who are in, you know, and it was so cloying. It was so annoying, all this prayer stuff. It's so stupid. And it does show how incompetent people in charge can be. They have nothing else to say, so they'll appeal to the lowest instinct of Floridians, I suppose, and say, oh, and we urge everybody to pray. Please, everyone, pray for the people. Well, first of all, prayer isn't going to do anything. It's make-believe. It's a way of making it seem as if you're doing something when you're doing nothing, because you can't do anything. And the major reason why you can't do anything is because those people who are in the collapsed building are dead. I mean, they pulled a kid out. He was really lucky. He was in just a perfect right place, and they pulled him out right away, and he was pretty close to the top of that pile. They pulled the kid out, and after that, it's been bodies. And it was obvious. You know, this idea of we're still doing search and rescue. They spent just about 2 weeks doing search and rescue when there was no hope. After a number of days, yeah, you know, you're doing recovery. There was a situation in India some years ago where they had an earthquake and buildings fell down, and a building fell down, and this guy was trapped in the building. And it wasn't as big a building as this thing. And he was trapped in there, and he survived for a week. The people around him died. Other people were also trapped in the same air pocket. And he survived because he was willing to drink his own urine. That's the only reason. He was in bad shape when he took him out of there, but he was alive. Everybody else was dead. These people are, you know, getting crushed. It's a big building. And when you get a big building, it crushes more because the top, it weighs so much. And again, this kid that they pulled out was, I think, one of the upper floors, and very lucky to be where he was. And so it's so bothersome to see them in denial and in engaging in magical thinking about, oh, we're going to rescue people, when there's nobody to rescue. And also this very annoying thing that politicians love to do. Oh, our thoughts and prayers, and really pushing this stuff. And I mean, politicians of all sorts, from the governor down to the police chief, pushing prayer as something you can actually do. It's a sad commentary on human beings, in my opinion. And of course, it's a big tragedy there, because you figure there are something like 130 people who are dead. All the missing are going to turn out to be dead. So, yeah, it's a big tragedy. And they got to start looking at those other buildings down there. I mean, part of the issue here is that Florida didn't come up from the ocean all that long ago, and it's limestone. And it's limestone that's heavily infiltrated by seawater. And salt water and concrete react. And so, yeah, that happens generally. And whether they didn't build it right, or whether the land simply went out from under part of the building, that's what did it. We see sinkholes showing up in Florida all the time. There was a thing, I think, 2 years ago, where a guy was in his house and he's hollering for help, and a sinkhole opens up, and it's just this big hole, and his house starts descending down into it, and nobody could get to him, and then he was gone. There's no way to get to him. He's in some super deep pit. And so this is how things are in Florida. That's how the land works. So it's tragic, and they really probably better start looking at some better rules for how you build things and what you build on and how they test to make sure that a sinkhole isn't suddenly opening up somewhere. Because with a big building like that, you don't need a large sinkhole to open. It just has to be in the right place. And then the weight of all that building ends up on top and next to nothing, and you see what happens. Okay, please, please pledge 1-212-209-2950. Please call the number and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And there's Mr. Outro Music. Okay, all right. We'll be back here in 1 week. Coming up next is a special of some sort.
It is. Tune in to find out how special it is.
And at 7 o'clock is Jim Freund with his program, Hour of the Wolf, all about science fiction stuff. Okay, thanks a hell of a lot for listening. We're glad we'll be back here in another week. And look out the window. Enjoy the warmth if you enjoy the warmth, or get some relief from it if you don't like it. And above all, remember what that, gonna remember to use sunblock next time, Dormouse said.
This is WBAI New York, listener-sponsored radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. And this is an announcement about WBAI's local station board election. It is underway through July 14th. We invite you to become a voting member or candidate in this very important election. Here's how it works. On your cell or laptop, go to elections.pacifica.org. There, you'll find details about how to become a voting member, how to nominate yourself or someone you know to become a station board candidate, and how to connect with your local election supervisor. Head to elections.pacifica.org to bring your voice, your vote, and your power to independent, grassroots, listener-funded WBAI radio. We thank you.